Welcome to the Philosophy Cast, where we take complicated philosophical topics and break them down for everyone to understand so that we can gain new perspectives on the world. I'm your host, Alexander Chotai. In today's episode, we will be interviewing Dr. Fumio Kiji from London University as well as Berkeley. She's done truly impressive research when it comes to Theodore Adorno's writings on jazz from the perspective of a jazz singer. She's also written a book called Jazz's Critique, Adorno and Black Expression Revisited, which shows just how much jazz history is intertwined with Black history in order to address the assertions of Adorno on the genre. Today we'll be discussing her perspective on Adorno's thoughts, gaining a unique and valuable perspective on Adorno's controversial stance. How could the consideration of Adorno's thoughts on jazz change our view on how we listen to music? How might it change how we live our lives? These questions and more will be covered in today's episode. Hello, Dr. Okiji.
Hi, Alex.
Thank you for agreeing to do this interview with the Philosophy Cast. We're very, very grateful to have you on the show. First, wanted to ask you a bit about how you came to the topic, because broadly speaking, a lot of people don't think about the philosophy of music. And if they do, jazz isn't the first thing that comes to mind. And then I found that even within the field of jazz philosophy, a lot of people don't like to engage with Adorno. A lot of people tend to brush him to the side. And so I wanted to know more about why you felt compelled to engage with Adorno's thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really, really good question. Well, about the time that I'm a musician, by the way, so I'm a vocalist. Mm-hmm. And I started my career as a vocalist on the London jazz scene. And around about the time that I started performing, I was also finishing off my master's degree at a place called Goldsmiths College, University of London. It was there that I came across Adorno. I was reading other people like Walter Benjamin and other German thinkers. And I was just so impressed by Adorno, just because he just seems to talk to so many of the concerns that I had as a young person, just feeling of, I guess, maybe not pessimism, but just dissatisfaction with the world and just like this real sense of wanting things to be better, but not wanting the easy solution to the problems. And so alongside that side of Adorno's work, I was also really sort of surprised at his writing on jazz, being a jazz musician myself and coming across these really what seemed to me uncharacteristic takes on this music, which came from, I guess, a group of people who were in the minority, a group of people who were subjugated. And Adorno, if you don't know, I mean, some of your listeners might not know, but Adorno was very, very concerned with giving a voice to the suffering and sort of elevating those people up on the margins. And so it was really surprising to me that he would write these essays on jazz, which were just horrible, like borderline racist, really, or maybe even racist in certain readings, and just showed a real lack of understanding of the music, but also a real lack of consideration for a whole group of people. So I was just trying to reconcile those two parts of Adorno, just those two conflicting areas of his work or his thought, these things that just didn't quite make sense to me, that they just seemed to be completely contradictory to one another. So that's how I came to Adorno.
Yeah, and you mentioned the role race played in Adorno's thought. I was wondering if you could maybe talk a little bit more about that. You know, what is the role of race in the reception of jazz? I would assume it has affected how it's been historically perceived. And so I was wondering what you could say about that.
Yeah, I think it's a really important question. I think it can be seen as a tricky question because it's not a given, even within jazz studies, although most people seem to accept it now, but it's not a given that jazz should be seen as a music that springs from African-American, from Black America. Some people would argue that even though Black Americans have been major contributors, it's actually American music more generally, that it is a mixture of European and African influences, which, and all this is not untrue, it is true to a certain extent. But what I think these ideas tend to miss is the fact that it's not so much the ingredients that make jazz a Black music. It's more the ways about going, that people go about making the music. You know, it's like the ways to the music that tend towards Africa and tend towards sort of a Black American sort of culture or tradition.
I think that's a great way to describe it. So I've looked into people like Louis Armstrong, for example, who actually had some rather controversial views on how race affected jazz. And I would agree that, you know, it's not just the influence where race meets jazz. It's the whole picture of how jazz is played out through history and how it's performed that really, really attaches it to an African culture.
Yes, I really feel quite strongly about that. And the more I think about jazz in my research and the more I listen to it and think about, you know, it just the place of Africa and the African diaspora in sort of the modern story, I really do feel that is the way that we can understand sort of the raciality of jazz. And of course, you know, this isn't to say that, you know, obviously the music brings together people from all over the world, brings together people of all races. And there have been a great many great white jazz musicians. But I would still say that they play sort of a black musical form. You know, it's the weight of the music is still Black, even if they're in their white bodies.
Yeah. And so you did mention listening to jazz. And so I'm wondering what kind of types of jazz were influential for you in your thinking or writing? Mm.
Yeah, well, these are all really great questions. One of the things I was really keen when I came to writing the book, and I think it comes from my background in performance and the types of jazz that I was interested in performing and I ended up performing. I was really keen when I came to writing not to cordon off certain types of jazz as kind of the popular type of jazz and then another type of jazz as the more experimental avant-garde type of jazz, although we can do that. And, you know, I think there is some value in that. I was very keen to see a continuity between, say, Louis Armstrong all the way up to sort of Don Cherry and sort of Ornette Coleman and John Coltrane and AACM. So I just kind of, you know, and likewise, I was really keen to not cordon off jazz vocalists as this kind of specialized area that didn't have that much influence or, you know, shouldn't really be considered as sort of the mainstream or sort of the main flow of jazz development. But actually seeing these singers as like kind of central to understanding, you know, the ways that the music really is about sort of conversation and it's about sort of discourse. It's about discussing ideas through music, you know, looking back to the past and sort of thinking about what you want to say about something you've heard and saying it in your own way. And I think singers through the standard particularly show us how that is done in the music more generally. So I'm very keen to like not see you know one side as more relevant than another. And that, I think that comes from my history or my background of singing both like standards jazz and like very old time jazz, and then also singing experimental avant-garde and free jazz and really understanding that, you know, I think the differences are kind of quite superficial.
Yeah, and that actually brings up another side discussion that comes with this topic as what gets counted as music and what gets counted as noise, because that was obviously a big question when jazz was first starting to bloom, and I don't think it's gone away since that. Where do we draw the line? Is there a line, right?
Mm. Yeah, I think that if maybe better to even not think about music or noise, because I think these things are really loaded. Mm-hmm. You know, when we think about, you know, what music should contain, and you're right, it's usually kind of pitted against, you know, what is mere noise, right?
Right.
I think, like, if you think, like, other than that, maybe thinking about, you know, jazz being this, as I said, this sort of conversation and this discourse and this way of communicating with one another and talking with one another and talking over one another. And so this kind of area of sort of generative discussion in music or in sound, right? I think that's kind of a better way to see it. But I think you're right. I think, like, you know, all throughout its history, there's been moves to classify jazz as, you know, noise. And that goes right back to Louis Armstrong, and it continues up probably to the present day with free jazz and, like, free improvisational types of music. And then on the other hand, you go the opposite direction, and there's this move to, like, canonize the music, sort of make it into a musical art form, which I think in some ways is great, because it means that, you know, people are getting money for what they do, and, you know, you're able to get concerts in great places. But I think it also has the threat of taking the music away from this very kind of this unstable but lively generative culture in which it occurs. Now, I don't think that you can do that. I don't think that any moves to canonize jazz music is going to take it away from the community in which music is made. So much of jazz happens in, like, informal play sessions and in people's, you know, front rooms, just like jamming. It happens when people are listening to music together or on their own. So I don't think that there's a way of containing that in sort of an institution. But I do feel that, you know, people maybe want to lift up jazz as something, as an art form, which maybe doesn't really speak to those forms, those more informal forms. And so there is a bit of conflict there.
There is a phrase I've often heard that is, the greatest jazz musicians will always be beyond clarification. You see that with great artists like Mary Lou Williams, who truly did a bit of everything, right? She was extremely versatile. And then you see that even all the way back to, like, Louis Armstrong, who revolutionized jazz with scat singing, is there's always going to be an element of a wild card with jazz. And it's a beautiful thing. And I think that is part of what makes jazz so unique, is that it is very hard to put in a box. And to continue in the direction of how jazz has been perceived, I was wondering if you saw any philosophical issues that come up with jazz in particular, as opposed to other kinds of music. Essentially, what makes jazz so unique in these discussions?
I think jazz is unique because I think the Black condition in modernity is unique. Not that there are other exceptional stories to be told in the modern era, you know, throughout modernity. But I think there is something quite particular about the story of Black America and the ongoing story that the music holds, you know, and it's not necessarily in its content. You know, we're going back to what we said a bit earlier about, you know, jazz is really about the way it's made rather than necessarily what it contains. And it's kind of going back to what you just said about, like, you know, you can't really pin it down to one thing. It contains all these different things. But as I say, it's like almost like it's an attitude or an orientation rather than those particular things that occur in any one time, right? So I think it's because of that particular social history that it does have a particular uncertainty and a particular unruliness that maybe you don't find in other sorts of musics. I think the fact that it's in a way a folk music, even though it's like it wouldn't have developed without recording technology, you know, it's really, really linked so strongly with that. But it is an oral tradition in a way. But it's an oral tradition of a people who, you know, they have had to, they were forced to move from their homes where they sprung from. And not only that, not only were they forced to move, but they were also, the attempts that were made to make a home in a new place were disrupted. And, you know, I still, to a certain extent and to a large extent, depending on who you ask, are being disrupted. And I think the music holds all of that contradiction and all of that, you know, just unresolved energy within it.
Yeah. And so on the race thing and the fact that jazz is a little bit hard to fit in one box, do you think those things have contributed to jazz's reputation in the past? Because I've certainly noticed as a jazz musician that it's been treated sort of as a whipping boy. At best, it's sidelined, and at worst, it's just outright condemned. And you see, specifically with Adorno, he condemns it through and through. And so what aspects do you think contribute to the way jazz has been treated?
I mean, people will definitely point, I mean, those people who condemn it will point to things that the general public or people, the common opinion might say, oh yeah, that's reasonable. Like, I guess sort of in Louis Armstrong's time, just the association of jazz with kind of bars, the wrong side of the tracks, you know, bars in which sort of illegal activity went on. So there was this like attachment or this association of jazz with illegality and, you know, and things which were not respectable. And that kind of really, I don't think jazz let go of that sort of reputation up until, I don't know, probably into the 80s when with the neoclassicists with, you know, oh God, what's his name? Trumpeter, I can't remember his name right now. But, you know, when they started to really, with the Lincoln Center, they started to really canonize the music where it became very respectable. So I think that's what people would say. But I think that the reason why it's not respected is because of this other way of doing stuff, which the music encapsulates, you know, this kind of the sort of the blackness of it, the Africanness of it, the fact that it, you know, that it's hard to pin down, that it doesn't have to be written down, it shouldn't, it can't be written down, that it's hard to really truly capture and replicate. I mean, I think once you do, you know, once you can't really do that, you can't really copy something in jazz. If you do that, then the copy really isn't jazz. It becomes something else. It becomes popular music, or it becomes, I don't know, even classical music. It could become that, but it's definitely not going to be jazz. So I think that's one of the reasons why it has this reputation. Even though I think all this other surface stuff, you know, tends to get the attention.
I think that we can't divorce jazz or really any philosophical discussion from history, whether that be the history jazz has and where it sprung up or the people who brought it to light. For every one of the episodes we've had on the show, there has been some aspect of history, because philosophy really does not exist in a vacuum. It is always going to be affected by the current conditions. And when jazz sprung up, it was at a very divided time where Black Americans were not treated equal to white Americans. And so that definitely has something to do with the fact that jazz is going to be treated in a different way than any other type of music. And then finally, I just sort of wanted to ask if you had anything to say to our listeners about why jazz in particular and music in general is important in thinking about philosophical and social questions.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. Well, as you know, I mean, music was really important to Adorno. It was one of the ways in which he was able to sort of take the temperature of the world. So it's a way to sort of read what was going on with the world, you know, the ways in which it was being ruined by certain forms of rationalization, the ways that people were losing their individuality to forces which sort of tore both their individuality but also their collectivity and their communion away from them. And so I think as a descriptor, music's really important. I think music also is super important as, if not a model, if not a blueprint, then like a suggestion or a gesture towards another way of being in the world, another way that you might live your life, another way that you might look at the world, another way that you might want to sort of develop yourself as a person or develop your relationships with others. You know, I mean, you look at the jazz ensemble and, you know, how there are lots of different approaches, and sometimes you'll have conversations, sometimes you'll have people talking with one another, sometimes you'll have like someone making a big speech with people just interjecting. Sometimes you'll have a whole, you know, a band of musicians who are just talking over one another, but they're in the space together and there's still that respect, even though it feels that they're not talking to one another, they're sharing the space in some way. And so I feel like, you know, I think it's a jazz not necessarily gives us a blueprint of a particular way, but it tells us that there are other ways of being together in the world. And it kind of, I guess, is maybe an encouragement for us to experiment with those other ways of being in the world together.
Yeah, I would agree with that statement very much. Because I wasn't always a jazz musician. When I first started to play the flute, I was doing more show band type stuff. And I came into high school, and the only option was the jazz band. So I started playing jazz since that point. And since then, I've thought of a completely new world and a new way of music. I specifically love the solo element of jazz because it's spontaneous. And that not only prepares you to be more versatile in your music, but all aspects of life. So I would agree. I've seen it firsthand that jazz really does change who you are.
Yes. That's great to hear.
Yeah. I remember you saying in the beginning you wanted to hear a little bit about why I came to Adorno.
And I would love to. Yeah, yeah. I'd love to hear that.
So Adorno was, in a way, a synthesis of two interests of mine, right? Because I was a jazz musician and I was starting to get into philosophy. And I've always enjoyed engaging with viewpoints which I don't agree with. And Adorno, who is very much critical of jazz, was the perfect thing for that because it was combining philosophy and music. And it was, on top of that, it was also a chance to challenge my own worldview. And after looking at how Adorno describes jazz, I think it was a great thing to do because it makes me more confident in my own love of jazz, but it also makes me think of how jazz has played a role in history because I'm also very interested in history as well. And when you look at the time Adorno was writing at and the world he was living in, you start to grow a new appreciation for the history of jazz, the philosophy of jazz. And like I said earlier, nothing exists in a vacuum. And Adorno was another chance to see how everything was interconnected. So Adorno, in some ways, was a synthesis of all my interests, but it was also something that jumped out to me as something that could be very enriching. And it certainly was. After researching Adorno for a while and putting together the episode, I would agree that it was well worth the time.
I'm super glad. I hope that you have time to branch out and read more Adorno and like can, you know, just read. I don't know if you've read any of his stuff on like aesthetic theory. I'm sure you'd be really interested in that. As you know,
Adorno is a very encapsulating figure because we do talk in the episode about his thoughts on the culture industry, because I thought it was a necessary background to his whole thoughts on jazz. So he sets up a whole new universe, almost like Marx, where he sets the stage for this whole new way to look at the world. With him, it's you know, the materialistic view of history, and Adorno creates the culture industry. So Adorno is a very, very thorough figure. I find him very fascinating.
Yeah, surely is. Yeah.
I really thank you for coming on. It was a pleasure to speak with you.
Oh, thank you so much. It was really nice to have this conversation.
Thanks for listening to the Philosophy Cast. We hope you learned something new or gained a deeper understanding of the world around you. Let us know what you think, and you can tell us your thoughts at thephilosophycast@gmail.com or at philosophycast.com. This has been Alexander Chotai, and I'll see you on the next episode of Philosophy Cast.